I'm Jolly Sandoval. I'd like to welcome you to the meeting of August 6th. Madam Clerk, would you please take the roll?
Alternate Board Member Campos, Board Member Casas,
yep.
Board Member Caserta, Board Ex Officio Board Member Chu, Board Member Gage,
here.
Board Member Herrera,
here.
Board Member Calvera,
here.
Board Member Kishimoto, Board Member Ness, Alternate Board Member Livengood, Alternate Board Member Moylan,
here.
Alternate Board Member Page, Board Member Pryor,
here.
Board Member Reed,
here.
Board Member Sellers, Alternate Board Member Shirakawa, Ex Officio Board Member Dager, Vice Chairperson Lucardo,
present.
Chairperson Sandoval,
present. Thank you. We are now going to go into closed session to consider conference with labor negotiators, Government Code Section 54957.6, and we will reconvene out here in public session at 6 p.m. Thank you for your patience. Hi, I'd like to reconvene this meeting, and we have no action taken in closed session this evening. So our next item on the agenda is orders of the day. I have a request from the staff to remove item number 32, the labor agreement with ATU under the regular agenda, because negotiations are still ongoing. Do any board members have any other requests? Do I hear a motion and a second then to?
I'll move.
Second. Great, thank you. And that was to accept the orders of the day. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, our next item then is employee recognition. And Mitsuno Baromeister, representing the Employee Advisory Committee, will tell us about tonight's honorees. Please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is my pleasure to announce the employees of the month for July and August, as well as the supervisor of the quarter for the third quarter of 2009. Our first honoree this evening is Christina Jaworski. Senior Environmental Planner in the Environmental Programs Department at River Oaks, is the Administration Award winner for July. Christina has been with BTA since 1995 and is viewed as an exceptional role model who is willing to share her expertise with others. She has been instrumental in advancing BTA's mission of sustainability, recently coordinating the e-waste collection effort and the composting program at River Oaks. Congratulations to Christina Jaworski, Administration Employee for the month of July. This evening is Shannon Kirtley.
Yeah!
Shannon Kirtley, transit radio dispatcher at the Operations Control Center at Guadalupe Division, is July's Operations Award winner. Shannon consistently exceeds the high standards of her job. In addition to her dispatch duties at OCC, Shannon serves as a safety committee member for the Amalgamated Transit Union, where she has helped implement changes to improve the work environment. As a dedicated employee of BTA for over 10 years, Shannon is very deserving of this award. Congratulations to Shannon Kirtley, Operations Employee of the Month for July. Honoree this evening is Miguel Martinez. Miguel Martinez, transit mechanic at Cerrone Division, is our maintenance employee of the month for July. Miguel has been with BTA since 1991. In his current assignment as a transit mechanic, Miguel performs skilled mechanical work to diagnose, maintain, and repair BTA buses and support vehicles. Noted by his supervisors as a highly respected employee with a great attitude and an exceptional attention to detail, Miguel is a true role model to his fellow employees. Congratulations to Miguel Martinez. For over 13 years. In her current position, she is responsible for supervising and coordinating the Operations Administration Office for the Sheboygan Division. Debbie is a key member of her division and is viewed by her management as an effective supervisor who maintains solid working relationships and is dedicated to helping her staff succeed. Debbie is clearly an asset to BTA. Congratulations to Deborah Palm, Supervisor of the Quarter. It's new win. Information Systems Analyst 2 in the Information Technology Department at River Oaks is the administration award winner for August. Min provides technical support for BTA's computers and networks. He is considered a technical expert who serves as a resource to employees for their installation and troubleshooting issues. Min has been with BTA for over 7 years and has received numerous accolades for his excellent customer service skills and willingness to assist others. Congratulations to Min Nguyen. Our next honoree this evening is Joseph Bradley. North Division Coach Operator is August's Operations Award winner. Throughout his 10 years at BTA, Joseph has performed with high standards and received many compliments for treating customers with courtesy and professionalism. In addition to his coach operator duties, Joseph serves as a steward for his fellow Amalgamated Transit Union employees. Joseph is committed to BTA's values of quality, safety, and dependability, and is very deserving of this award. Congratulations to Joseph Bradley, Operations Employee of the Month for August. Our final honoree this evening is Patrick Megan. Cerrone Division is our Maintenance Employee of the Month for August. Patrick has been with BTA for over 6 years. In his current assignment as a transit mechanic, Patrick diagnoses problems and performs repairs to ensure that BTA buses operate in a safe and efficient manner. Patrick is an admirable role model to his co-workers. And whether working independently or as a member of a team, he upholds BTA standards of quality job performance. Congratulations to Patrick Mangan, Maintenance Employee of the Month for August.
At this time, Jerry Hobson, our operations manager, retiring after 37 years. Let me repeat that. Jerry Oxen is retiring after 37 years of service. I'd like to have a motion this time, in a second, to recognize Jerry for his 37 years.
Second.
Wonderful. I'd like to, without objection, read the resolution for Jerry as they're taking the photos. Jerry Oxen retired from Santa Clara Valley Transportation Authority after 37 years of distinguished public service and was promoted to Quality Assurance Manager to Maintenance Support Services Manager and finished his career as an Operations Manager, Rail Maintenance for Rail Maintenance at VTA. And he served as a role model at all levels of VTA, establishing a strong work ethic, promoting safety, dependability, courtesy, cooperation, and professionalism. As an employee of VTA, he was an extraordinarily knowledgeable, skilled, and dedicated employee. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Santa Clara VTA does hereby a special tribute, due honor, and recognition to Jerry Oxen for 37 years of dedicated public service, passed and adopted by the Santa Clara Valley Transportation Board of Directors on the 6th day of August.
Very much. Our next item on the agenda is public presentations. And we have a couple of cards here for item six and a couple more. First, I'd like to announce the order of the speakers, and then if you would come up and kind of queue up there, that would be great. I believe the first name is James.
Yeah.
White Mine?
Right.
Okay, James, come on up to the microphone. Remember, you'll have 2 minutes to speak. With about 5 seconds left, I'll start giving you the timeout.
Okay.
James will be followed by Tim Rance, and then followed by Jim Fink, and then Michael Ludwig. Welcome, James.
Thank you. I have a question for Don Chase, the St. Clair mayor. I heard at California's Great America they were going to put in a wooden roller coaster, but they couldn't because the neighbors were complaining. Are they going to put that in next year or not? You're right there.
I'm from Gilroy.
Oh, sorry.
In fact, the Santa Clara mayor is not here this evening.
Well,
and then, Jake, we can find out the answer to that and get you that information.
All right. Also, the 49ers stadium, where are they going to put that?
They're going to put that somewhere after the voters decide if they want it.
Oh.
They're going to vote on that at some point in the future.
Going to Gilroy.
So I think the VTA in January, I think they're going to be doing monthly service changes. I think they're doing a lot of big cutbacks because this economy, we need to cut back on our stuff.
Thank you, James. We have Tim Rance, perhaps? Or not? Jim Fink? Oh, I'm sorry, Tim. Thank you.
On Tuesday, July 28, 2009, I was waiting for a westbound Route 32 bus at the bus stop on Monroe Street, immediately east of the Lawrence Expressway in Santa Clara. The bus was scheduled to arrive at its previous time point at 11:41 a.m. At approximately 11:50 a.m., the bus arrived at my stop. The driver opened the door and informed me I would have to wait for the next bus. His explanation was that he had an emergency and couldn't pick me up.
I must admit, Tim, I was a little slow in writing, but I'm asking the staff, did you get that detail down? on Route 32, 1141. It was supposed to be there. It got there at 1150. Tim, we have your information here.
Yes. Mr. Capps has it in the back.
Well, I have it on the card too, but you will. And then will you CC the board on what the issue was and what the problem and how it's going to be resolved? Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Our apologies. Jim Fink?
Thank you. I will be back also momentarily on item 7, but for now, suffice to say, I am very disappointed that the 27 line was taken away from the stretch along Saratoga Los Gatos Road, Highway 9. Now there is no way you can get to that part of Highway 9 on transit. You can still get to West Valley College, but the Rockville Pollard Road completely misses that Monte Sereno section altogether. Again, also, I'm disappointed with the move that happened this July with the elimination of the 15 community bus in Morgan Hill. To begin with, it wasn't available on Saturday or Sundays, and that whole neighborhood along Dunn Avenue all the way up onto the hill now has no transit. Not to mention the area off of Vineyard Boulevard to the southwest of the Tenant Station Shopping Center. I think that was a big mistake. I also think it was a big mistake to take service sometime back off of Foxworthy Avenue. I had a mischief of a time, at least a 30-minute walk getting to Foxworthy Baptist Church on the weeknight or on Sunday. Foxworthy Avenue needs service, and they need to put the service back on Highway 9, and they need to put that service back into the residential area of Morgan Hill. I will submit that even if the ridership is small, there's still a ridership there that needs and wants that service. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. You're probably not going to like what we're doing over the next few months either, though. Unfortunately, such is the economy. Michael.
Hi, I'm Michael Ledwig. You may remember I was here 2 months ago with half of my recommendations on your light rail restructuring. I'm here now to present the other half. First off, I don't like the proposal that some of the options have to convert First Street in downtown San Jose to two-way light rail service. It would be too much construction disruption for too little of a time benefit. And so I don't like that. However, I do like the idea of the trains from Santa Teresa going express between Ohlone Chenoweth and downtown San Jose. I think that could save enough time to lure additional riders. That's my personal opinion. And let's see, what else did I want to say? Oh yeah. Some of them have the SONA line being constructed, a little extension to directly serve SJSU along San Carlos Street. I like that. To provide the direct service to a major university is a good idea, which we currently don't have on light rail. Now, as you'll recall, my recommendations last month were to not close those four low ridership stations at the west end of the Mountain View line, to not combine the Great America and Lick Mill stations, and to not do the skip stop service on North First Street. And when I looked at all the recommendations, and considered what I like and what I don't like. I think that the number five is the one I like best. It combines the things that I like and leaves out all the things I don't like. I hope you go forward with number five.
And Michael, you've registered that comment with our general processor. Are you expecting that you said it tonight that we should write it down, because I'm sure somebody is.
I hope you write it down tonight, because I haven't been to any other meetings for this light rail restructuring.
Chris Augustine just noted that. Thank you.
Oh, okay, cool.
Very good. And our last speaker under public comments is Ross Signorino. Welcome, Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. With all these lines that are being cut, you know, maybe it's good that the voters of Santa Clara would vote for the 49er stadium there so you can get more ridership that way, which is a byproduct to get the football team there. And at the same time, I was thinking, with all this ridership that's failing to use our system here, the BTA buses and light rails and all that sort of thing, that maybe we will have surplus equipment on our hands and maybe get in on this Concord program and get rid of all this surplus, and maybe you can balance your budget that way.
Ross, are you talking about the vehicles or any of us?
Well, if the shoe fits.
Thank you. All right. We're going to go now to the report from the General Manager, Michael Burns.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. A few items. And at the end of my report, I'm going to talk about the proposal to help our budget situation through service reductions and the process to achieve those. But first, the news on ridership continues to not be good. Ridership was down June 2009 compared to June 2008. Overall in the system, 10% on an average weekday basis. Bus boardings were down 8.2% and light rail boardings down 15%. This is a trend that we're seeing throughout the region. Every one of our interagency partners has also seen significant ridership decreases. The Altamont Commuter Express, the ACE trains are down 26%. Ridership, Caltrain's down 12%. The Capital Corridor, which has had strong ridership gains, is down just under 10%. So clearly the recession is, we're seeing the impacts in terms of ridership on transit systems in the region. My next item is to report on our mobility options program, and I think I do have a slide on this. BTA has developed a mobility options travel training program to enhance the accessibility of bus and light rail service. This program will fulfill the broader goal of ADA by encouraging individuals' independence and self-sufficiency by providing free travel instruction to persons with disabilities and seniors to allow the participants to make confident, convenient, and we are, and safe travel choices. On July 31st, this program had a kickoff event at the Southside Senior Center in San Jose. The Mobility Options bus was deployed for the kickoff event. There were approximately 30 participants and everything went very smoothly. Board member Kalra spoke at the event and participated in a ribbon cutting ceremony, and it was really quite a successful event. This is a program that we are receiving a federal grant from the New Freedom Program to pay for 50% of the cost. So it was a good event and a good program that's getting off the ground. My third item is an update on public meetings that we've been having with regard to the BART project, the BART extension into San Jose and Santa Clara. We have held 3 of 5 BART public meetings to share the newest schedule and funding information with the public and to have community participation in determining design options that are required for us as we advance into federal environmental review. For the three meetings, we've had a total of 179 members of the public attend. Two more are scheduled for August 11th in Berryessa and August 12th in downtown San Jose. Community continues to demonstrate their interest, ownership, and support of the project, as demonstrated by the high attendance, the level of engagement, and the insightful comments that we are receiving at these meetings. Our real estate group and community outreach staff are making great strides in building relationships with community leaders and property owners within the project boundaries. And we'll be sharing the feedback from these meetings at the next Warm Springs Silicon Valley Rapid Transit Project Policy Advisory Board meeting, which is on August 26th, as well as making some decisions on preferred design recommendations. We are also expect to be submitting the administrative draft for the environmental document for the project in 2 weeks to the Federal Transit Administration, and we hope for environmental approval hopefully at the end of the year, but sometime possibly at the beginning of 2010. So that project is continuing to move, and we're it's good that we're getting out and keeping the public informed on the progress that we're making. My next item, and we have a couple of slides on this. As I notified the board through an email, we received a mutual aid request yesterday to provide transportation for our troops returning from Iraq. We provided three buses and transported approximately 90 soldiers from Mineta San Jose International Airport to the Army National Guard Armory across the street. The troops were on a 400-day deployment with approximately 1 year of that time in Iraq. They're part of the California Army National Guard, first of the 184th Infantry Battalion. The troops were reunited with family and friends after arriving at the armory and then departed. We're very proud to have been able to assist with this request this morning, and we welcome our troops back home to Santa Clara County. And there are a couple of photos of our buses and the transportation that we provided. For my final item, there is a presentation, hard copy of a presentation at your place. I'm not going to spend a lot of time reviewing this. It's also on the back table. But I do want to begin some detailed discussion of our transit service reduction plan. As you know, we were not entirely successful with achieving all of the labor savings that we had hoped for. This requires that we look at reducing service to meet our budgetary constraints. Beyond that, things have actually gotten worse, and I'm sure that's not a surprise to anybody, but the last couple of months in terms of sales tax receipts have been significantly down. We will be going out to the public next week with a series of seven public meetings, and we'll be beginning the conversation about these service cuts with the expectation that the board will ultimately approve whatever the plan is in October, and the cuts would go into effect in January. Moving to the first slide, just a graphic illustration of the problem that we face. The bar on the left is the fiscal year 2008 actual, so just last year's actual, $295 million. This is sales tax and state transit account revenues. We had adopted in our budget for fiscal year 10, $238 million. And we're now looking at a projection of $217 million, so a reduction of about $21 million, and a similar reduction of $14 million from what we have adopted in our budget, just approved now three or four months ago, to what we are projecting for actuals. We're hoping that that there is some success with the state funding. It is still a long shot. We're successful in the appellate court as a transit association, but the state has advised us that they will be appealing that to the state Supreme Court, and that is not expected to help us if we are successful during this the two-year budget time frame that we're working with. So the combination of not reaching our labor savings targets and the continuing decline in sales tax revenues really requires that we look at service changes and service cuts. On the bus side, we're looking at about an 8.6% decrease, which results in some kind of a change to 62 of ETA's 73 bus routes. We are proposing 6 routes to be discontinued, some routes on Saturday and Sunday, and a whole series of impacts to other routes in the system by increasing the headways and reducing the frequencies. Unfortunately, a lot of what this will do is it will undo a lot of what was done just over a year ago with the comprehensive operations analysis. On the rail side, our proposals for a 6.5% decrease in car hours. We're also looking at discontinuing Mountain View service after 10:30 and reducing train consist size. So we did implement some of these changes already and are seeing some of the savings, but again, we need to do more. And I'll also add that what we're talking about here is probably not the end of what we're going to need to do over the course of the next 2 years. These changes require an environmental review, and we are going through the process of looking at the environmental impacts. Our expectation is that the impacts from the service changes will not have a substantial environmental impact, and therefore yield a negative declaration. We will have a document available for public review beginning August 10th, documenting that. We will have a public hearing on August 18th. And again, at the October board meeting, look for adoption of the environmental review of the environmental impact of the service cuts. With regard to public outreach, there already has been a significant amount of public outreach. We've worked with press outlets, and they have picked it up, and they have been covering the meetings. We've done brochures. We've updated the website with the information on the meetings. We've done route-specific flyers. Materials are at the back table. As I mentioned, we will have 7 public meetings. We do want to meet with not only board members but also local officials to discuss the impacts in their area specifically, so you all are very well informed as to what's being discussed. We'll have this discussion at the advisory committees in August and standing committees in September. We also have a workshop scheduled for September 25th. This may be a subject for that workshop, and look to an October approval of whatever the ultimate plan is. The overall impacts are savings of $6.5 million from these service reductions, a 1.1 million passenger reduction in terms of loss of ridership, and of course, consistent with the previous action with regard to paratransit service would be impacted consistent with the changes in the bus service plan. So I wanted to make sure that the board was aware of some of the details of what we're talking about. We do have the brochures at your place, and we'll start with the public meetings next week. And we'll be doing a lot of work, a lot of focus, a lot of resources and attentions on developing this service reduction plan. And as you can see, the $6.5 million doesn't meet the shortfalls that we're projecting at this time. We do think that it's prudent to go forward with this phase. And let the dust settle and see how we're doing with revenues and see how things play out at the state level before we take the next step, which will really be a major service impact throughout the system, much more significant than what we're talking about at this point. So with that, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Michael. I have one question, at least up here on the dais, and then I'll ask for members of the public. So, Nancy?
I just wanted to ask.
But I don't think your mic is on.
Sorry about that. Of the 1.1 million passengers that are anticipated to be lost annually, what percentage of that would you say is due to job loss?
That calculation is based specifically on the service reductions. So we're not accounting for further ridership loss as a result of job loss. As I reported at the beginning of my report, we saw a 10% reduction in ridership overall, and I would say the majority, well, almost all of that is directly related to job loss.
Okay. And the fact that gas prices are a little lower than they used to be probably plays into it somewhat as well.
Well, that does have, that can have an impact, but I think with the, when you look at our ridership profile, the impacts that we're seeing right now are the result of the loss of jobs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Then we have, if no other questions from the dais, then we have two members of the public who'd like to speak. Eugene?
Evening, board members. Eugene Bradley, an independent Waterfall/advocacy group, president advocacy group in San Jose. One quick question, though, for Mr. Burns, in particular the BTA staff. Did you get the state funding back if the state somehow does manage to win the appellate suit? That is, if the CTA manages to win the appellate suit from the state, what is the chance that the fare increase would be either canceled or else rolled back? If, that is, if the decision comes after BTA, should BTA implement the fare increase and ridership cut? I can rephrase that, because that probably did not come out very well.
I think I understand it, though, and I think if you give Michael a chance to respond, and if he doesn't
right.
catch it.
Yeah, I understand what you're asking, and Eugene, it's there's so much uncertainty as to what might happen, even if there is success, what that might mean in terms of dollars, that it would be wild speculation to even think about what those funds could be used for. But I'll just remind you, as this presentation showed, sales tax revenues are still substantially down from what we've approved as part of the budget, so we've still got a big hole to fill there. So
right.
we need to wait and see how that plays out.
Right. The rest I'll save for later agenda items. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Michael, isn't it also true that the state, though, is talking about filing an appeal? And
yes.
So this is several years out.
The state's advised us that they will appeal to the Supreme Court, and the timing from there could be years. We just don't know.
Okay, thank you. James Wyman?
I think we are doing, on the subject of light rail, I think we are doing a good thing by cutting the service back to 10:30 on the Mountain View line. And what are some other trains going to, I heard there's going to be two more trips after that. Do we know whether that's going to be or not?
I don't think we do.
Okay. Yeah, also, I think you should cut the Santa Teresa line back to 10:30. If this economy is bad, we do not need light rail running after 10:30.
Thank you, James.
Okay.
Do you have a card in for item 7?
I put also 7 on that card.
Oh, yeah. Well, and silly me, I followed it under 6. Come on up. It's Jim, right?
Yes.
There you go. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, and I am here to suggest
the BTA should always and only consider Fairhox recovery. I will submit that with a 30% inflation rate last year, that something that in numbers has a price $1 in 2008, the number may still say $1, but that $1 is only worth 70 cents. The problem is inflation more than anything else. I want to ask this board, I want to ask Mr. Burns, I want to ask everybody connected with VTA and transit to always prefer fare box increases to service reductions. To equal this amount that you're proposing to save, what would it take in terms of a fare box increase? Maybe say 50% or what are we talking about if we go strictly to the fare box, which is what I want to recommend, go strictly to the fare box to solve the problem. Because to me, the cut in service is untenable. I would rather pay higher fares and get service than pay the same number on fares, remembering that inflation is making the number worth less than it was the year before, and get poor service. So I would ask this board to prefer fare increases as a remedy to economic shortfalls at all times. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item number 8, which is the report from the chair, that would be me. I want to just tell you that we had a great turnout recently, mid-July, at the Filipino-American festivities at the headquarters of BTA. There was a great Philam community there that had organized some dancing and some food and a lot of camaraderie out there during the lunchtime hours, with even some of our BTA staff doing some great dances, traditional dances there. This weekend, Vice Chair Sam Lopardo and I will be attending the San Jose Jazz Festival along with BTA's mascot. Did you know we had a mascot, by the way?
No.
BTA's mascot, Terry Firma, and we'll be on stage tomorrow evening because that is... that is our sponsorship evening. We understand that quite a few people take mass transit down to the Jazz Festival, and so as part of our sponsorship, I'll be announcing Sarah Jones and the Dap Kings, who are headlining tomorrow night. I wanted to remind you that when we send notices out, to make sure that you'll be here attending either a committee meeting or a VTA board meeting. It's important that you respond on a timely basis. And I bring this up for two specific items. One we have this evening, where we need an absolute number of votes to pass an item because it's MTC's regulations and we don't want to keep postponing that. And I've forgotten the item number, but we're going to vote on that shortly, I hope. As well as on September 17th is the League of Cities Conference. It starts on a Thursday. That Thursday, I believe, is our traditional committee meeting day. And so if you would please check your calendars and let the board secretary know whether you will be attending the committee meetings that you're scheduled for that day. It would be helpful for us to be able to figure out what the quorum of those meetings are going to be. That comes on the heels of a pretty important decision and discussion we'll have in October in terms of the service cuts. So we want to try and ensure as much attendance in those committee meetings that compete with the League of Cities Conference on that Thursday, September 17th. That's all I have for my report. And seeing no questions, I'll ask Noel Thibault from the CAC, the Citizens Advisory Committee, to come and give us his report. Welcome, Noel.
Thank you. Madam Chair and board members, I just have one very quick item to report, and it's in reference to an item later in the agenda, number 31, the BTA response to the recent grand jury report. A few items in this report directly concern the Citizens Watchdog Committee, and most of the others do not. I want to advise you that our committee decided to prepare an independent response to the Superior Court. We have been studying issues and plan to reach consensus on our response at our meeting next week. Thank you. Any questions?
Great, thank you. Noel, I think you have a question for Chris Moreland.
Yes.
Is the board going to get a copy of your response just to...
Yes, I don't have it for you today.
Oh, no, sorry. It's worse. Thanks, worse.
I would expect that. Thank you. I don't see Margaret Abikoga in the audience, do I?
No.
Okay, is there someone else representing the Policy Advisory Committee this evening? Ah, check. Come on down. Mayor Page, how are you?
Excellent, thank you. Thank you very much. I had a very short report. We did not meet last month, so I have no report. Thank you.
But you know what? I'm going to go back to my report for just a moment because that reminds me. I'm going to ask this board to consider when you set the calendar at the end of the year for next year that you consider not having a meeting in July since most of us are on vacation with our city. Under our city jurisdictions, and it's the only time you can really get away. So I'll have next year's chair entertain that there be no even committee of the whole in July. That way nobody has to stay around. But I see a lot of nods and then I can't.
No, I'm just suggesting if we, you know, I would rather if you had the meeting, two meetings in the same month, because you always have our meeting in June, the first Thursday, and have it, you know, the last Thursday. Because otherwise, you know, generally the next meeting that you after you skip is a long one. And I'd rather have, you know, more. I mean, it's just something to consider,
right,
rather than, you know, not having one because, you know, what's the difference? I mean, just push it up a week and you can have the meeting and get your business out of the way. Because sometimes staff can be impacted by not having, you know, as they were this time, but not having people around. So just a suggestion if you want to do fine, if you don't want to consider that.
Absolutely. I'll have the Vice Chair, make that as a note. Chris.
Perhaps I don't need to say this because the Vice Chair is here, but clearly the current committee of the whole thing didn't work. There were three of us in July, and about 30 staffers burning all their time. It was kind of embarrassing. So we should come up with a different way of doing it.
Duly noted. Also, the other item I forgot, I should check my notes, I suppose, is that starting next month, our closed session will start at 5:30, and our regular session, as I mentioned at the beginning of this meeting, will convene as soon as our closed session business is done. So there will be no longer a time certain for a 6 o'clock start. With that, we move to the consent agenda. It's been moved to approve.
Second.
So moved by Kyle, seconded by Gage. Chuck Reed is abstaining. And all those in favor say aye. Opposed? Abstentions. Great, thank you. Welcome, Greg. I'm sure the traffic down E80 was not fun. Let's then go to the regular agenda. We have item number 27. This is for adopting a resolution electing to hear the resolutions of necessity for the Mission Warren Truck Rail Program. This item requires 10 affirmative votes.
I'll move approval since this was heard before and not passed because it was an amendment.
We did have a full hearing on this last month, but we did not have enough numbers passed to pass it at that point. That was an item. So moved by Gage, was that seconded by Kyle or Caserta? Or passes? We're going to call it the survey. All right. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions. Thank you. Now we're on item number 28. This item is being presented by... Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Yeah, Phil Lopez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Board members. This item, we're requesting authorization to enter into successor labor contracts with three of the BTA's unions representing our administrative employees. ASME Local 101, SEIU Local 521, and TAEA Local 21. The contracts are for 2-year terms to conclude on June 30th, 2011. The major terms are detailed in the memorandum, but mostly center around economics. The contracts represent a collaborative effort on the part of ETA and these unions to strike a balance between surviving the current economic crisis and protecting hard-won employee rights and property interests. The most notable economic features are the agreements on employee pay freezes and unpaid employee furloughs. These contracts achieve a targeted cost savings of $13.1 million from these groups that were presented to the board in our budget presentations earlier this year. The negotiations were difficult, considering the economic environment, but were assisted by our shared goal of protecting jobs and service and our mutual efforts to achieve these goals. We're thankful for the union, for the unions for their hard work and good faith in this process. With their input, we crafted savings programs that we believe will yield the projected savings and save jobs while maintaining the core of the union's current rights and entitlements. And we have our labor relations manager, Bob Escobar, here, and myself, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
And we have some questions before comments. Sam? Okay, then. Doc?
I just want to thank you for doing a great job. Thank the unions for being cooperative. We all know what position we're in based on our revenues that are coming in, and I'm very appreciative of that. So I'll move approval if there's no further comments.
There are comments, but it's been moved and seconded, and we'll deal with that in a moment. From the public, we have Ron Roberts.
Good evening, Madam Chair, board members. I want to say two things. First off, I want to thank you for your efforts and appreciate your patience in letting us go through the negotiations the way they should go through. And yes, management and labor, they fought it out, and we have the same end goals, and that was to save some money from BTA. The second point I want to make is that SEIU 521 recommends that if you do approve the contract, that we had 90% ratification for your information, long membership status, which is a great number. So it's our recommendation that we approve.
Great, thank you.
Any questions for me?
Okay.
Thank you all.
A little comment from Sam?
I just want to thank the folks at SEIU and ASPEN TAEA for their willingness to sacrifice. You know, the numbers we talk about are all in dollars, $13 million over 2 years, but it doesn't tell the story about how many families are able to continue with mom and dad keeping their job, how many of our customers out there, many of whom are very transit dependent, are able to continue to receive service. That's the real story, and it can't be told in numbers. So I just want to thank you for your sacrifice and thank our management team for their hard work.
I would echo that thanks, and also include the confidentials and management staff too. I think everybody, and the board actually, everybody took a little bit of a hit, and I think it just shows that we really do want to provide service as much as we can at this point, and that the economy is really affecting all of us. So with that, it's been moved and seconded. And Nancy?
I just wanted to join in on the thanks. Thank you for your understanding, your ability to look at the big picture, and all of your sacrifices. They're greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
All those in favor? Say aye. Sorry.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. All those in favor of meeting and stand with the gavel, say aye. Okay, let us go to our next item, item number 29, please. This is the bus purchase contract. You received a revised agenda for dated July 29th for this evening on this particular item, as well as letters of protest that have subsequently been withdrawn. I think Michael Hirsch, our operations manager, is going to lead us through this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good evening. I'm Michael Hirsch, Deputy Director for Maintenance and Security. The item before you tonight is to approve the purchase of 70 low-floor 40-foot hybrid diesel-electric buses for a total amount of $46,464,153. In addition, you will be approving the option to purchase 37 additional buses should funding become available. The selected vendor is Gillig of Hayward, California. These buses will be used to replace the majority of our remaining 97 and 1998 high-floor buses, which have exceeded their useful life and are plagued with frequent lift failures. We're very excited about this purchase. If you approve this item, you will be bringing the most environmentally friendly hybrid buses available today to VTA. The memorandum in your package contains many details about the features and process that we have followed to get to this point. I'd like to go over a few of the highlights. We received three bids. The bidders were Gillig Bus of Hayward, California, New Flyer Industries of Minnesota, and Orion Buses of New York. The engineer's estimate for this project is $70.1 million, and Gillig's bid is $70.3 million. The other two proposers were not selected, one based on price and one based on not meeting the technical specifications, specifically on the length of the bus. We did receive one protest. That protest was denied, and the manufacturer who submitted it has elected not to proceed with their protest. The bus we have selected comes equipped with year 2010 EPA compliant power packs, is a low floor bus with the highest capacity mobility device ramp available today. We've paid particular detail to maximizing accessibility features. We have heard loud and clear that more bike rack capacity is desired. And while all three bidders propose a rack with 2-bike capacity, we will continue to work with the California Highway Patrol and Gillig to seek approval for installation of a larger bike rack. This project is made possible by the receipt of federal stimulus monies. If you approve this item tonight, we'll be putting stimulus dollars to work. You'll be authorizing VTA to award a contract to a local California company. And as I mentioned, you'll be bringing the most environmentally friendly hybrid buses manufactured today to our valley. This concludes my presentation. I will be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thanks, Michael. First question is from Nancy.
Thank you, Michael. With the fact that the 44-inch bus was built rather than the 40, does that have anything to do with Daimler and European standards or European measurements or anything of that nature?
I think it has to do with the bus industry in general. We're seeing buses are trying to get larger. I don't think it's European. Daimler bought Orion, which has always been a U.S. bus.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And Sam also has a question.
Thank you. A couple questions. One was, I know our engineer's estimate was about $70 million. We've been on construction projects seeing substantial haircuts in these tough times and much lower bids. Is there a reason why we don't see much downward pressure on prices?
Yeah, there's several reasons. It's actually a good time for the buses. There's great pressure to get new environmentally friendly buses in. Their order books for all manufacturers are very well filled up. This was not a surprise to us. This is what we expected.
I'm glad somebody's making money. The other question I had related to the midlife battery replacement costs. And I understand the report said it will need to be programmed in future years. We certainly hear about hybrid, the challenges of the midlife battery cost. Do we have that already estimated or at least costed out so we know what we're going to be needing to, what kind of money we'll need to go chase in future years?
We don't have a specific dollar but battery technology is changing literally daily. We're hopeful that it will be minimal and possibly even avoided as battery technology advances, but we did feel it important to point out to the board that we are buying a hybrid bus and batteries is an area we have to be careful with.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Second. This has been moved by Kyle and seconded by Herrera, and we have three comment cards on this. Michael Ludwig, and Michael will be followed by Jim Stallman and then Eugene Bradley.
Even though I like the fact that you're purchasing hyper-diesel electric buses for the advanced technology and gas savings, power savings, etc., environmental savings. I like that part, but I don't like the low floor part. I may be in the minority here, I don't know, but I've noticed a couple disadvantages of low floor buses over the when compared to the traditional floor buses. And the biggest disadvantage is the lower capacity. They can only take a smaller number of passengers before you get to standing room only. And I think so on your busier lines, this sometimes is an effect. It is noticed and so that's why I don't like low floor. I also don't like low floor because another disadvantage I see is that the seniors and those even though they have the level boarding, they have to walk back a long ways because of the front wheel wells. After they get to the fare box, they have to walk back in the bus a long ways to get to the seats, I don't think that's a good thing. In the traditional floor buses, the seats started right away, and so that's why I like traditional floor buses over low floor buses, and so. I have to say you should consider those things in the future.
Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. Our next speaker is Jim, and Jim, I believe your email has changed our RFP a little bit.
Hi, I'm Jim Stolman, I live in Saratoga, and this opportunity to buy new buses comes around ten years, whatever, and we probably didn't get the best bus we could have, but there's a problem with the advisory committees, and it was too much of a challenge to try to get input into the spec before the spec actually went out to bid. So that's kind of bad news. Maybe next time we'll be able to select a bus on VX.com or something and actually have you know what you're about to say yes to. I mean, you can't say no because of the timeline. It's our money, and, you know, it's really too bad. But on good news, in Saratoga, I would like to thank BTA. We got some of your free bike racks, and we're putting them we have already put them at strategic neighborhood bus stop locations, because a lot of times people bring bikes on buses just because there's no place to lock them up, and hopefully the retail centers in one of the larger cities in the county, I won't mention any names, will also be doing that and not just ignoring police to get bike racks at bus stops, because that can help accommodate bikes on the transit system. We're a county that's really spread out, and the lines are going away, the neighborhood access, people realizing they can use a bike, a beater bike to get the bus stop, you know, that might make them a transit rider, whereas otherwise it's too far to walk. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. And then Eugene Bradley.
Evening once again, board members. Just a couple of concerns regarding the Buick low floor bus purchase proposal. I don't know how many of you have ever been aboard the current fleet of Buick Vantage model hot low floor buses, but I noticed that in the front, if you were about, say, Dollar Sandoval's height, and you'd sit down, the window still comes about right up to your cheekbone, so you're going to have trouble even seeing out the window, so you can't tell whether or not your stop is coming, in particular if that stop is not announced. So I wonder if there were any plans. I don't know if this is particular to the Vantage low floor bus model. Are there plans to either lower the windows a little bit such that people that are basically under 5 feet can at least be able to see out of the window?
I don't know, 5 feet. I get your point.
The answer to the question is no, but I want to point out that the reason that Beam is in the bus there is it's one of the highest crashworthiness rated buses because of the way that Beam is designed for side impact.
So in other words, the windowsill is designed more for the windowsill, the high windows was designed more of a safety feature, if anything.
That's correct, sir.
I see. The other suggestion for future bus purchases, and this is something that was done, I know this was done in New Jersey a lot. You should get at least one of each model that you're bidding and have passengers and bus drivers rate the buses to make sure that both will be using that particular bus the most. This way you get input from, get buy-in from passengers and bus drivers as to whether or not it's the right model for them overall, just as a future suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Eugene. All right, it's been moved and seconded. Other comments from the board? Okay, then all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions. Thank you. Our next item then is item number 29. Number 3. And this is to adopt a resolution establishing the rates and fare increase proposals as we've discussed a couple of different times previously. Joe?
Yes, thank you. If you recall, at the June board meeting, the board adopted a resolution to authorize the increase in fares beginning January 2010. And basically that is to authorize the base fare to go up 25 cents from $1.75 to $2, to have proportional increases on our prepaid fare media and an increase of 20% on our EcoPass. As the general manager has already shared with you, we have received a lot of bad news about the economy since the budget was adopted in June. Our third quarter fiscal year 2009 receipts, sales tax receipts, were almost 21% less than fiscal year 2008. And that's compared to a forecast of an 8% decrease. For the fourth quarter, the State Board of Equalization estimates that ETA's fourth quarter receipts will be 15% less than the fourth quarter of fiscal year 2008, and that compares to a decrease of 5% that we were forecasting. So to offset these revenue losses, we are recommending to accelerate the fare increase to October 1, and that will generate, we estimate, about an additional $1 million. But in order to do that, we need your approval tonight so that in a timely fashion, we can get the printing and distribution of our prepaid fare media out to our sales outlets. If there is concurrence to move forward with this fare increase tonight, we will begin an outreach campaign that will include media releases, announcements on the ETA website, as well on our buses, and distribution of information of ETA flyers on our buses and at various sales outlets. With that, I'll conclude my remarks and be prepared to take any questions.
Questions for Joe? It's been moved and seconded. Joe, did this recommendation originate with the PAC?
Isn't it?
The PAC committee, as they were looking at other transit agencies in our region, not waiting until July 1 of next year, but moving their dates up to increase fares. And so the original proposal was to come and wait until January 2010. The PAC suggested we try and do something ASAP, recognizing that the economy was and is still somewhat in a free fall. So, thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye. Oh, wait. We're not voting yet. We have a number of cards. Take that back, but it has been moved and seconded. We'll first hear from Torrance Phillips, and then Eugene Bradley, and then Michael Ludwig. Torrance.
Evening, Board of Directors. I'm here to represent Ruby Madrano. She was not able to attend this meeting today due to medical illnesses. The reason I'm representing her today because she has a statement that would like to be presented to the Board of Directors, which is this. If you do plan to increase the fares for October, this will be cut, basically be hitting below the belt to the most vulnerable groups in the South Bay area. And it may not be here today, but the numbers are high that would have stress on this increase. My compromise, instead of by doing it by 50 cents for the fare, however the fare increase is going to be, do it half in October and the full deal in January. And also, on my attention, apparently, Luby told me that when you guys are auditing your buses for ridership, sometimes the audits are happening on hours where riders are not on the bus, and it's not really being done on the peak hours where you normally see ridership. I'm just saying, I'm not sure which bus is, but exactly maybe it's 65, because I've been telling by a few people on there that it's been extremely crowded for the community bus on certain hours of the day, so it goes to a lot of hospitals and schools. And that'll be all.
Thank you, Torres. Eugene?
Good evening once again, board members. I echo Torrance's concerns regarding the fare increase. When you combine that with the service cut proposal, this is basically not just an attack on the working poor, but it also continues with a debt spiral that's being, that I understand is being seen nationwide through this recession. Every effort should be made by VTA to at least do everything possible to get the state and federal funding back for public transit as soon as possible. In fact, there is one bill out, HR 2476, that has been co-signed by Congressmember Zoe Loughran. VTA cannot get on this bill soon enough to make sure that it's at least part of the upcoming House Transportation Bill. Again, Torrance's concerns are echoed, and the group that I run strongly urges you to support HR 2476. Let's do everything we can to keep the buses and trains going, and to, most importantly, make them affordable for everyone again. Thank you.
Thank you, Eugene. Michael.
I just made a comment here. I know, listening to you, Eugene, I know that you didn't mean that we're attacking those people, because that's not our goal. Our goal for VTA is to actually move people, and we're caught in a situation with the economy. And, you know, the services and the increase in fares, the decrease in service, is just scratching the surface. I mean, in the future, the same goes with the train system, is we may not even have transit if it keeps going the way it's going. So we're kind of forced to do things because we can't, and I know the VTA staff has really done, you know, we work with the union, we work with people, we try to reduce every place we can, and we're down to bare bones. So it's not that we're attacking those folks, it's that we have little choices. So I know you didn't mean attack. I mean, that's
I know.
Word.
Well,
you know, appreciate it. Thanks.
If I may, not everybody, unfortunately, not everybody's going to see it that way, but I'm just saying.
It's not a dialogue, and we do run that gamut sometimes, but we are pretty sensitive to what we feel like our job is in trying to handle that.
Right.
Michael?
I just wanted to make one comment. Even though I support the most of the components of the fare increase, I think it's a reasonable idea because of inflation. But I do want to point out one particular thing about moving it up from January to October. And it's for people like me who are on fixed income. We get our yearly inflation adjustment to our fixed income in January of each year. And the original timing of the fare increase would make it easier to budget for it. Moving it up to October makes it harder for those of us on fixed incomes to budget for this fare increase. And so that's the one reason I don't like moving it up, even though I am a general supporter of the fare increase in January.
Thank you, Michael. Again, this is an action that I think no one on this board takes lightly, and no one in public service serving, I think, in any governmental institution at this point really does take lightly. And we have a lot of, as you all know, a lot of competing needs that we need to address. At this point, then, I would ask for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Well, I think we've already got a move and second, right? Madam Clerk? Yes. Okay. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. Let's please then move to item
31.
31, how could I forget? This is in response to the grand jury report. Michael.
Yes, Madam Chair, this is our staff response to the civil grand jury report. This response needs to be submitted by September 1st. And what we have tried to do is we've tried to be as factual as we could. We did attempt to try to stay somewhat neutral on it. I have since had a discussion specifically with Director Cassis, and he has identified several places within the response where we were probably a little bit too close to it in terms of our reaction. And he's made some very good suggestions, in my view, of some changes in language and changes in tone. The changes that he's suggested and he's talked to me about do not affect the substance of the response. And therefore, what I would like to request is that the board approve the response with the expectation that staff will go back and look at the language and give the staff some editorial license to make the changes that make it really just a factual, straightforward response. And maybe take away some of the personal tone that some of us thought we were pretty successful doing, but now some time later and having some independent eyes look at it, can see that maybe it's maybe we didn't do as good a job as we should have. But the changes are editorial. I think I support them. And so what I'd like to request is that the board approve it with giving the staff some editorial license that doesn't change the substance of the response, but changes the tone.
Why
it's
do you
been, hang on one second, everybody just slow down a minute. It's been moved by Lucardo, seconded by Kyle. Now I'll take questions. And I think I saw Chuck and then Don and Chris.
Not having talked to David or the manager about this, I think I agree with the assessment of David. I just wanted to point out the three places where I'd like the staff to take a look at it, which are comments that appear to be characterizations of motivation or mental state, in response to finding 10, the response to recommendation 11, in response to finding 14, staff should just look at those when they're following the lines that Michael outlined. I think there are a couple of places there where some language can be deleted or modified.
Thank you, Ron.
I don't know. I'm just jerking Michael around.
Okay.
I don't know why he and the grand jury, they're all volunteers.
He doesn't hate them. He just wishes they had a different lens to look through, I think. Chris?
First of all, let me say I had a similar reaction to my big staff when I read the report, so I think I understand the response. What I would like to say, though, is there any chance that the current results or status of the advisory committee enhancement process could actually be used in this letter? Or that the response that's due by September 1st can say, you know,
we're actually looking at a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to have this full response to you in another month. Is there another way that we don't have to just slam this in sight unseen within this month? Because instead of taking the emotionally understandable tack, but maybe not necessarily the optimal tack of VTA disagrees with every single finding, and you're crazy. There's a couple of them where the board has already taken action or is currently contemplating taking action that would be able to throw a bone to this report, and the response would, I think, come across a lot more measured. For example, page 7 of 12, recommendation 8, new VTA board members must have transit knowledge. Now, the letter makes the valid point that VTA went out and got the organizational assessment done, and in fact, the board, on the recommendation of Member Sellers, has already taken some action to try to address that problem. So clearly the board feels that was a valid concern, and is already doing something about it. So to say, we completely disagree with this, no one needs to have transit expertise, is inconsistent with the board's own actions. I think, now that's a substantive suggestion, right? And some of this other stuff that's coming out of the advisory committee, I guess the best example would be page A4. In which this is the list of all the things that were fashioning her. One advisory committee member said, the board doesn't even know we exist. And the response is, even if that statement were made by a disaffected committee member, it's absurd on its face. Okay, now as someone who has sat through every meeting of that advisory committee in enterprises, I can tell you I'm hearing stuff like that from a bunch of these people, not from my own committee, but from some of the other committees. Okay, now, it may be absurd, but the fact is, there's no need to imply that this couldn't possibly have been said. I'm telling you we're hearing it all the time. But I think that some of the actions that the VTA, this board is going to take to address those feelings, even if you think those feelings are absurd, would be like a really good response to this issue. Instead of saying, this person's gripe is absurd, to say, here's the reason why these people think the board doesn't know they exist. And here's what we're already doing about it. And we already heard a great example on the previous agenda item, which Chair Sandoval says, this idea came out of the pack. That's all it takes. That's all it takes. If people in the advisory committee see that someone heard their idea and actually influenced the action, that solves a lot of that problem. And based on what I heard in the advisory committee enhancement process, we're in the process of fixing that. So I think there are actually more substantive and positive responses you could make to this report and say, here's what we're doing. You do mention already, we've got this enhancement process going, we brought in the expert consultants. I think there's a better story to tell than the letter tells. So it would be great if we could take the time to tell that whole story, but if not, I think that a couple of substantial changes would really make this a stronger response. And again, I totally understand the reaction. I have the same reaction myself. But I think we can do better than this. And I think it requires a few substantial changes, not just tweaks.
I believe those times are set by law. So you can't go and say, I'm going to give you something for the next month. And the other thing is it may be out, the grand jury that's there now may be out, ready for the new one to come in. So, once they do their job, they disband and then they get their new.
Well, and in fact, two things that you stated are true. One, the timeline is set by the grand jury themselves, and there's no way to appeal to ask for an extension. And secondly, a new grand jury has been impaneled, or will be impaneled shortly. I know because we have two residents from the city of Cupertino who will be joining the new grand jury. And so here's what I believe. One, it would be nice, I think, if we could tell the full story, Chris, but I'm not frankly sure the civil grand jury is interested in the full story, number one. Number two, there's the grand jury frequently comes to organizations such as VTA and other governmental institutions and audits us all the time. So if there was some type of history that the current grand jury members looked at, they could look back and see, well, what did the grand jury in previous years ding VTA for? And then see if we were really doing an assessment to see if any of those practices or findings were changed. I think that's when you tell the story.
Okay, so that you answered my question that you can't get around the deadline. Then, in sort of the spirit of what Mayor Reed said, although I'm acknowledging I'm suggesting slightly more substantial changes, the two things I would suggest are to go back through here and recognize where the grand jury was making the same points that your external consultants made. There are a few of those. And where this board has already taken action to try to acknowledge it and just sort of acknowledge it, and then say as much as you can about the other things about where the advisory committee enhancement process appears to be addressing this, and you know, it won't be ready by September 1st, but you know, we think this is being addressed. If you can do those two things, I think it would be a much better response.
I think we can take a look and see if we can incorporate any of that information in here. But again, the civil grand jury interviewed well over a majority of board members, I believe. Or maybe not. Okay. Well, let me just say, they told me that they interviewed a number of board members, but not telling me who specifically. I tried to share some of that information with them. It has yet to appear in their report that they gave to us. So, but we will go back and rework it. This is a draft. David.
I just wanted to ask, Michael, if it's possible, we have our subcommittee meetings on the 20th of August. It's a couple weeks in advance of the September 1st deadline. Just from an informational item for each of these committees to know what was submitted, it might be helpful just to have that final iteration that's going to be submitted available. So that'd be helpful. So.
And if you have any suggestions, such as David has offered to Michael, or Chuck has made up here on the dais, as to areas you think should be looked at, please get those to Michael ASAP since you've read this document already. So that would be hopefully in the next couple of days so that the staff can work on that so that we can see it in our committees in a couple of weeks. All right, great.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. And we'll have the revise for the committee meetings.
But because the date that it's due is after the date that we need some action this evening to pass this.
Also move that we follow staff recommendation on Michael's words that turned
in. I thought we had already made a motion. But so I was going to ask just for a vote on that motion. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions. Thank you. Doug Garner. I did it again. Eugene? It says card right here on my agenda because I wrote it, but Eugene, we're dealing more with a timeline issue than anything else, but would you like to make comments?
Right. Just noted that it is great to see that VTA is at least crafting a more civil response to a civil grand jury. Having these labeling, a friend of mine once told me about the dangers of dehumanization in politics, particularly when stuff doesn't agree with known status quo. Good to see that VTA is at least getting a civil response to a civil grand jury. We look forward to seeing at least the history of basically VTA and civil grand jury interaction. That's much needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Eugene. Item 32 was removed from the calendar earlier. Item 33 then brings us. Ross, I didn't think I had a card for you.
No, I didn't have it. Can I just speak?
Speed on up here.
Thank you.
Ross, go around. I want you to have an industrial accident here.
What's that?
He said, go around. I don't want you falling down and suing us.
Are there bars up there or something? What is the trapeze artist? Well, no, I see the big bars, Jim. Are there shorter ones? Are there? Yeah, you guys, if you don't mind using the walkways, I mean, whoop. We don't need an accident. The county would probably not cut us any slack, right?
No, you don't have to hold a new line.
Yeah. Exactly. And
blame me.
Have poor teachers, so walk
chambers and paint stuff, so.
Use the aisles.
The reason my action were jumping over your railing there is because I didn't hand the card. I was hoping you'd see me, and you did. Now, I have a question to Mr. Burns. You talked about when you have this meeting, you have this sheet here, August 20th, you have three dates, three meetings. Which particular meeting will you have in regards to the grand jury reply that you will need to speak.
But we'll include it for all three of them.
Oh, all three men?
Because all the board members are involved, so we'll include it for all three.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ross. Thank you. And then just, if you don't mind, turn that that card in for the record.
Oh, and the Madam Chair? Maybe the advisory committees could just get a copy of it, too. Is that possible?
They'll be able to get a copy of it afterwards. They're meeting
right.
Next week.
I mean, so, their next meeting.
Yeah, their next meeting. September.
Right. Great, thank you. Item number 33, items of concern and referral. I haven't heard any this evening, but I've been missing cards all night, too. Okay. Item number 34, there's a copy of the monthly legislative history matrix in your packet, and I do have a speaker on this, and that's Eugene. Using the aisle. Thanks, Eugene.
What happens when you have good gym teachers in New Jersey? You can do things like that. But anyway, H.R. 2746, that's a bill that's currently in Congress, which I described earlier. It's been co-sponsored by Zoe Loughran. When will VTA consider a support or opposed position on this particular bill? Is there any chance that such a position can be taken at the next board meeting as soon as possible?
What I'm going to do is ask our legislative staff person to check into this, and then we will oftentimes I write letters on behalf of the organization in terms of those bills, and I'll just make sure I have it as part of my information for next month. Okay.
Fair enough.
Thank you. Okay. Item 35, a copy of the minutes of the committee of the whole, all four of you, is up here on the dais. Or three? Well, it wasn't me, so that must be this. I don't know the exact number.
Okay, there's a small minority group.
Is up here on the dais. Any questions? Item 36, your advisory committee minutes, etc., for July and August are also included in your packet. Item 37, the summary notes for the JPBs, JPAs, the ABCs. None? Okay. There's no reports from your PABs. And I think now all we have to do is the ANNOUNCEMEANTS. Any answers?
Yeah. I just have a question. I have on my calendar two audit committee meeting dates. One's September 3rd at 4 o'clock, which is before the normal or regular BTA meeting. And then I have a December 3rd at 1 p.m. These are days that the audit committee. And looking at Don as the chair, if we can just confirm, because we're actually meeting a week later on December 10th as a workshop on all day, and I didn't know if you wanted to piggyback that audit committee meeting and on looking at staff as well, rather than having a separate audit committee meeting the week before. So.
I can't answer that while looking at my calendar, because I don't know front or back. But Michael, if you would take a look at that and see if the staff is available, and then give my office a call, Colleen, and then we'll see if we can work it in, and then we'll get back.
Yeah,
I don't mind doing it, but I may have something scheduled out.
And that's fine. I'm fine keeping it. It was unusual. We were trying to piggyback the two meetings together,
right,
and we set the schedule so that the selfish was raising.
Sure, we'll take a look at that.
Chuck, did you have an announcement? No? Other announcements?
I just want to announce that Dolly did an outstanding job tonight. It's only 7:35.
Hoorah!
So I want to give you a round of applause.
We might have gotten out earlier, according to Sam LaFarge.
Hey, good night, Dolly.
There's
a smile on Don's card.
He's keeping track of you, Don. I watch out. Okay, this meeting is adjourned, except Madam Clerk, please make sure that we get the September 17th question. Thank you.